The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by Exchange Wire.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from Exchange Wire. A slight change to the regular format today, as we're going to use the festive season as a good excuse to look back at the year that was and a look forward at the year that is yet to come. To do this, I'm thrilled to be joined by Rachel Smith, CEO of Exchange Wire. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you very much. Hello, John.
Hello, and glad you're with us today to have this little festive preview and review. We're also joined by Lindsay Roundtree. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Excellent, good. Well, we will crack on. And as I mentioned, we're going to do a bit of a look back at 2024 and a little look forward at what's to come in 2025. So my first question to you guys is, who will be getting a big ad tech Christmas present this year and who is going to be getting the proverbial lump of coal, visit from Krampus, whichever negative Christmas associations you may have? Rachel, I'll start with you. Who's getting the present?
So who's getting the present? I think that, there'll be many people that are perhaps not in agreement with me on this, but I think those getting presents in ad tech this year are the financial brokers that have done some deals. There's been a little bit of a return to M&A activity, I would say, in ad tech and marketing tech in 2024, which has been very welcome from all angles. Of course, you know, it's easy to sometimes have mixed feelings about these acquisitions, especially when the bulk of your clients are advertising and marketing technology companies. Hello, Exchange Wire. But the reason that I always feel really optimistic about them is because it tells us something about the health of the industry, I think. It's really important that we continue to see technology innovation. And I think that there was a glut or perhaps a lack of investment in ad tech and marketing tech in companies of a certain size for a couple of years there post-pandemic. And I think perhaps now we're starting to see a return to some fairly significant M&A activity that's going to give investors confidence in the industry and in the sector. Our friends over at First Party Capital, Rich, Kev and Kieron. Who's the third guy again?
Kieron. Yeah, actually stumbled at the third one. That's hilarious.
It's the third bloke. Yeah, Kieron. They always get really excited around M&A activity and I know that they're very excited for their own portfolio in 2025. So I think that that's been an interesting part of the industry, sector of the industry this year. And, you know, it's sort of ramped up as the year's gone by, right? Notable acquisitions or at least, intention to acquire Outbrain Teeds, Experian and Audigent, buying Audigent, some really interesting offbeat acquisitions, some would say, in the industry. Omnicom and IPG, that was an interesting one, just news released there a couple of weeks ago or last week. And then, you know, there's also been some other strategic investments and, even an IPO, right? Canal Plus Group IPO'd as a standalone company from its sort of media holding company. And I just think all of that activity makes for an interesting landscape. But the people that are getting the presents are probably the finance dudes that are doing the deals.
Yeah, I mean, whoever brokered the Omnicom IPG deal is going to have a stocking full of presents, I can well imagine. Lindsay, who gets your ad tech Christmas presents for this year?
I mean, I had two tranches here. One was those with successful exits and acquisitions, because I agree with Rachel. I didn't think about the financial brokers of it. That's a very good angle to take. But mine was, and I made a list, so the ones that Rachel didn't mention, so MediaOcean being bought by Innovid, MediaSense being bought by fellow consultancy R3, Viant bought Iris TV, Publicis buying Margin United Commerce, which I thought was a very interesting one this year, Kinetics merging with JW Player, Zeta buying Live Intent, Samazio being acquired by Samba TV, Walmart, of course, bought Vizio, and that was, again, very interesting in retail, the retail media space, Outbrain buying Teeth, LiveRamp buying Habu, a creative and the share through merger, and then a creative
of course
Camino, yeah, again in the retail, yeah, media space, and of course Rachel mentioned the Audigent being bought by Experian, and the most sort of very recent one. And I think there's that for me is like, well done guys, it's really good to see some activity happening, especially in Europe. Like, a lot of those are actually European companies and that's really exciting. So maybe Europe as a whole gets a massive Christmas present. I mean, for many other reasons it doesn't get one at all, but maybe in the ad tech space it does. But then I also had the tranche of exciting stuff happening to these companies. Like, you know, there's the trade desk just continue to see kind of growth upon growth upon growth. And they're doing some really exciting things in many different spaces. When you look at things like retail media, you hear lots from the companies like Kevel, a European company, that are kind of really excelling in the space and kind of really making big waves in the space. In the attention space, there's Lumen. MIQ have been quite big this year and kind of going out and being bold in kind of what they're talking about. I've got to give a shout out to DigiSeg as well, who won Grand Prix at the Wires in November, which I thought was a massive achievement for, you know, a kind of a smallish ad tech firm from the Nordics. So well done, DigiSeg. And then I think just publicists more generally, because in the agency world, publicists tend to be killing it. And they managed to get Snoop Dogg in their annual end of year video with Artur Sadun, which was incredible. And I really enjoyed that. So yeah, and when I used to work at publicists, I used to really enjoy all the videos they do every year with whoever the CEO was. And this one was a very funny one. So for that reason, you get a big present.
Christmas presents. I mean, it's a far cry from the from the cameo. I wonder how much they had to pay Snoop Dogg to do that cameo. It's a far cry from the cameo.
I don't even want to know.
It's a far cry from the cameo that we lined up for Ciaran's birthday a week ago.
Cool. So we've had the good. So who's the bad? Who's getting the, like I said, the proverbial lump of coal, the visit from Krampus, who's had a bad year, Lindsay?
It feels like the same companies every year, and I'm just going to like blanketly call out the walled gardens, but in particular Google. I mean, if
it's got to be.
I haven't even got to say why. Just that's it. Bye, yeah. Google. Yeah. Done. Yeah. See you next year.
Totally. The big G has most definitely been on regulators' naughty list. And, you know, I mean, they spent so much time, so much of their year this year in court and not even defending themselves very well. If you look at the summary, you know, the which we discussed on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, the summing up arguments on both sides of the antitrust lawsuit in the US. And, you know, the broad opinion was that the Google lawyers were not even really doing that much of a convincing job. They didn't even sound convinced by the arguments. So, yeah, lump of coal, I think, for the big G. And also, you know, I mean, come on, badly behaved, like totally leading everyone down the garden path with the cookie announcements. I mean, obviously, I am, you know, I'm massively, you know, I'm generalising here in a tongue-in-cheek fashion. I'm sure that the decision-making processes internally were a lot more complex than that. But on the receiving end, it really felt like this was the year that they just dropped the rope, I would say, and went, this is too hard. So we're not going to do the cookie thing anymore. We're just not going to do anything about that anymore. We're just going to let you guys sort it out. See ya.
It was a bit like a, I don't wanna, like toddler tantrum, kind of like, this is too hard. Yeah. Okay, fine. Let's not do it then. Don't worry. Let's just not do it. It's easier.
Yeah.
Just tell them it's their choice. Yeah. We've done it. We're deciding it's everyone else's choice now.
Yeah.
And say that we're putting everything back in your control and this is for the good of you, not for the good of us. And that's the annoying thing that they've been very good at this year is claiming everything is for our benefit, and it's just not.
No, absolutely not.
And as you said, Lindsay, you know, there's a few walled gardens that could be levied at Apple as well.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If I had a year similar to that, but yes, I think Google was always going to be the obvious choice for not getting any presents or, you know, getting the coal this year. So. As well as, you know, we've chatted on a couple of the negatives. What does the industry need as a New Year's resolution this year? What do we need to rethink in 2025? Rachel, I'll start with you.
So I'd say, borrowing on the theme of who's been on Santa's naughty list, I'd say that anyone in the industry that is still largely basing their advertising and marketing activity on cookie-based targeting and measurement, I think they really need to make a New Year's resolution that it is time to move on and do things differently. So whether that's, you know, whether that's tech vendors still relying on the, you know, availability of cookies to make their solutions work, whether that's brands still sort of blindly walking into, you know, directing their spend towards environments where cookie-based targeting is still used, relying on that for measurement of their investments, or whether that's even, you know, various corners of the industry still not doing enough to get themselves into a position where they're either basing their business on the availability of first-party data, or at least thinking about the privacy-compliant elements of the tools and solutions that they might be using. So, I just think, you know, not in a draconian way, but I think everybody has got to be honest with themselves about the future of advertising and marketing not being focused on third-party cookies and old measurement tools or any tech solutions that are going to be borrowing from that sort of bucket of techniques, because if it's not consumers that will be opting out of those options, then it will be privacy legislators, especially in Europe, but also probably in other jurisdictions, that will make that impossible. So now's the time more than ever to start doing things differently. And, you know, we've been talking about it for years. There was an imperative before because we thought Googie, I'm not sure who they are.
Rachel's just had a mini stroke.
I mean, it is 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Where I am. So it is mini stroke time in the night.
Googie.
Yeah, I think there was a cross between Google and cookie. So, yeah. Anyway, Google were allegedly deprecating cookies. That was what was keeping everyone's minds focused on trying to do things differently. That focus isn't there anymore. It's no reason to not do things differently. So, yeah. Make a New Year's resolution.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the messages we've heard from the industry this year, is that just because Google won't deprecate cookies doesn't mean that everyone else just shouldn't and get on with the stuff they've been working on now. Lindsay, what do you think is the AdTech New Year's resolution?
I mean, boringly, I had the same answer. It was reducing the reliance on cookies. It's because it feels like it's just been such a thread of everything we've done and talked about throughout 2024. And the other one is just Googie need to be better.
Yeah, they definitely need to pull their socks up.
But of course, that ties Googie being better ties into the cookie conversation, and it's this whole thing around generally reducing reliance on the walled gardens. That's not to say like don't invest in them, but it's always been said, and as Rachel said, this has been going on for years and years. Like this is not new for 2024, but it is always easier to just dump your money into the likes of Google and Meta. And probably now, you know, TikTok, add that to the list as well, rather than looking at what else is out there and what can be better for you. And there's been some really interesting stuff come out this year in terms of looking at different measurement solutions, looking at different ways of targeting that don't rely on the third-party cookie. There's some such exciting and such innovative tech stuff happening in our industry that is time to be able to properly explore that. But it is also sometimes just easier to put more money into Google and Facebook. And that needs to be kind of balanced and measured as to kind of what the answer is there, and kind of, you know, really thinking about what you're looking for in 2025. Because if you're just focusing on, well, this is my target, I know that target, Google's going to be the obvious answer, that's not necessarily the best solution. There's other ways of being able to get that and really be able to sort of diversify what you're doing and really understand your target audience differently and better. And I think that requires you to look outside of those walled gardens.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we've heard a lot through the litigation that's gone on with the walled gardens this year about how this could be, you know, an opening up and an opportunity for the indies and the open web to really kind of stake a claim. So I hope, yeah, that's, you know, it becomes a consideration for the wider industry. I'll chuck in one. I think that I've become quite interested in brand safety. Bountiful Cow did a study this year that was did a project that was regarding blacklists and brand safety that I thought was fascinating. And I've started thinking a lot about it. And I really think that a New Year's resolution for the industry should be to take a good hard look at blacklists and where you are restricting content with quality publishers and really kind of shooting yourself in the foot. I think it's fascinating. I think it's long overdue a rethink. So that is one I would like to chuck in on the resolutions list.
I like that. It's a really good one. We've had so many publishers talking to us this year about what an issue is becoming and how it's really affecting how they get their revenue, and they're having to diversify for many, many reasons. That shouldn't have to be one of the reasons. There's so many other reasons that publishers need to diversify their revenue streams, but actually the simple case of looking at your block list, looking at your suppression list and understanding kind of, you know, there's been so many good examples that we've mentioned on the podcast loads of times this year about simple things like having Paris as a block list meant that in your block list meant that you were being affected by being able to try and target people during the Olympics. All these things, they need to be revisited and really audited to understand what it looks like. And there were much smarter ways than lying on keyword block lists in 2024 and definitely going 2025. Again, talking of diversifying media, those things need to be explored 100%.
Absolutely. Right. Next thing we will look at. Okay, we've done a bit of backward gazing. We will now look to 2025, and I'm keen to know what your one key prediction is for next year, Rachel.
Something that I think will become an opportunity, I suppose, for everyone across the industry is that I think advertising is going to continue to come to any sort of digital environment where audiences are, where ads are not currently run. So I think the obvious option or the obvious suggestion there is that in any kind of LLM and generative AI chatbots, I think we're going to start to see advertising coming into those environments, and that's not going to be necessarily, 1st of Jan 2025, but I think next year is going to be the year that we start to see advertising opportunities become solidified in those other environments. And the reason that I say that is because I think we are now at a period in history where people realise that content that is free to consume has to be powered by something else other than investment and a subscription-based business model. And so I think advertising is essential, really, to continue propping up free content. And I think that's going to come to AI chatbots and large language models in 2025. I don't see how it can't, because the popularity of those tools is only going to grow. We're all using them, now, and I just think that's going to become an even more essential part of our day-to-day lives. And also, the likes of Google are really heavily inserting their AI chatbot even into search functionality. And so you're going to start to see brands and advertisers want opportunities in those environments and outside of Google, but even probably Google as well. No one's going to be able to afford to continue running that technology and providing that kind of content and information just on the basis of some other kind, either subsidised by some other part of their business, if you're Google, perhaps advertising elsewhere, or on the basis of some form of subscription models. I think the subscription is going to be a contributor, but arguably some of that subscription will need to be returned to the original source content, which could be, mainstay publishers, it could be researchers, it could be anything else. So even, for example, the Perplexity AI model, which is contribution-based, is great, but I just think they're going to need advertising as well. And I know it's a completely different channel, but it reminds me of the early days of streaming and Netflix, running purely on a subscription model. We always knew over time that wasn't going to be sustainable. It's not comparable to written content, but I just think that I think we're going to face something similar when it comes to LLMs and generative AI chatbots.
Yeah, I think that's,
good opportunity for the advertising industry.
Yeah, definitely. Lindsay, what would your key prediction be for 2025?
That everyone keeps talking about bloody cookies and AI. Yeah.
They're definitely going to do that. No two ways about it.
Yeah. I don't want to repeat everything that Rachel's just said, but I think AI is going to play a huge role in this. And if you just look at whenever anyone I've spoken to talks about innovation in 2025, AI seems to be the number one thing they talk about. And actually, if you look at our latest innovation predictions piece of 2025, 90% of the contributors mentioned AI, not just AI generically and not like AI and GPTs and LLMs, but AI, how AI will help finance, how AI will help creative, how AI will help planning, how AI will help reporting, how AI will help. And it's going to, whether we like it or not, it's going to underpin so much of what we do across how a business within the ad tech space is run next year, I would say. But with that needs to be caution, because there is this kind of this fear around the over-reliance on AI. And, as Rachel pointed out, certainly in terms of, a lot of the lawsuits that are happening with content producers and publishers and the AI tools, there's going to be more legislation, there's going to be more lawsuits, there's going to be kind of more people protecting their content, protecting their IP from these LLMs, that's going to maybe make it harder for people to be able to really use AI to its maximum potential. It's going to be a lot of leveling out next year, I would say, but much like what Rachel said, a lot of leveling out into kind of what it looks like and how we can actually make the most of it. But I do think it's a very interesting part of the industry that we're going to have to pay very close attention to. And there's some exciting stuff happening, but there's also going to be some watch points, and it's not going to be like a smooth sailing for AI next year, but it will be a big one.
I mean, I also think that it's going to become critical, as we all know, in day-to-day business functionality. It's going to, you know, I think this is obvious, doesn't need to be said, but it's going to revolutionise the way in which we work when it comes to high volume tasks and dealing with repetitive administrative tasks, but also high volumes of data. And I'm going to draw a link here to a recent study that ExchangeWire has completed with Skeleton Key, which is on data maturity amongst brands in the APAC region. It's a really complex study, which I'd highly recommend everybody download and read. But what comes out of it that's really interesting is that there are still some really fundamental challenges that brands are facing with data management and capabilities and capacity. I'm not suggesting that AI is going to be a solve for that, but I found this study really interesting because despite the sort of technology tools and solutions that a lot of these brands might be using, and we surveyed brands that, you know, had significant experience in advertising and marketing. So we were speaking to the right type of professionals that ought to know and understand how to gather data and use it and make it a really valuable resource for the business. But the results were really interesting. You know, people felt their maturity was much higher and further advanced than we expected in some areas. And then in other areas, the study pointed to some really fundamental struggles that brands are dealing with respect to data management and execution. And I just think that we're going to be looking everywhere to try to plug those gaps. And it's not necessarily going to be, oh, we need a whole new sort of, you know, DMP style data management system. It's going to be, what are the other tools that we can use to make this more efficient and to draw this and to make this sort of data gathering and management and execution a little more seamless across organizations. So I think that's where we're going to start to see lots of parts of businesses picking up on AI tools to help them.
Yeah, I will put the link to that report with Skeleton Key in the show notes, so you can go straight to the downloads and get that for some light Christmas reading. It's a really wonderful report that shares a lot of insights into the region. A fantastic piece of work all round. So do give that a download. I suppose my key prediction was going to be along the same lines of AI and where we're going in terms of the publishing industry. We had Reese McLaughlin from ITV on the show a few weeks ago, and he talked a lot about the guardrails being off with AI, the rules are being ignored here, and that's leaving a lot of space open for bad acting and questionable behavior. And I think that 2025 will probably see a tipping point in the first few months regarding the relationship between the AI platforms and their rapid growth and the publishers whose content they have been liberally feeding on. We'll see a change in remuneration models. We'll see a change in litigation strategies, I think, regarding AI and how LLMs are using it. But yeah, my prediction was also along those lines. So big year for AI, I think.
Yeah, and I also actually highlighting a point that Rachel said about advertising and the need for advertising within these platforms. There's no getting away from it. We, as Rachel said, for years we said Netflix would be going down the advertising route. They always adamantly said they wouldn't, and look where we are. And also Blue Sky have said that they are not, the CEO has said he's not going to ever have advertising on the Blue Sky platform because it contributes to the shitification of the web, which I think is a little unfair, but I look forward to a year down the line, some point next year, where he decides he has no choice but to introduce advertising into the platform. So yeah, 100%.
100%. And it's, you know, honestly, like, let's not forget, it's not just advertising that contributes to the shitification of content. I think there's a few people that manage that all on their own.
Mm, yeah. Without too much pushing.
That's it.
I'll be honest with you, I'm enjoying the current iteration of Blue Sky. It is very much like the early days of Twitter. It is a very friendly, very a welcoming environment. And it's like having my beloved old school Twitter back, where you could watch people trying to jump over a puddle, or you could see some llamas that escaped and ran down a highway and follow that all day on Twitter. I loved it when it was simple and it was nice. But like you say, the influx of users, money will talk. I have no doubt that even though they're protesting now that they won't be using advertising, I would absolutely be absolutely stunned if it wasn't here in 12 months. The bots are already starting to appear. So I do fear for Blue Sky's longevity in terms of being a good Twitter alternative. Elon Musk absolutely gets my lump of coal, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Just to go, it's been quite forgot to bring behaved. That.
Yeah.
Forgot to bring that up in the first question. I hate that guy. Anyway. we've looked at our predictions. And obviously, we all know that it's been the year of mobile for about 20 years. But what will 2025 actually be the year of? Lindsay, what do you reckon?
There's a few key things that that came to mind immediately. One was obviously AI. The other was retail media. And retail media, as kind of highlighted earlier with some of the acquisitions that have happened this year, is just going to keep growing and growing and growing. It's a fascinating space. It's sort of splitting into sort of the retail media network and kind of the popping up of retail media networks everywhere versus kind of the retail media endemically and non-endemically. And I think there's so many different interesting things to look at. And, you know, we're already having conversations with people, with brands, publishers, agencies about our ATS events next year, both Singapore and London. And it's the thing that's coming up a lot in conversation. So I have no doubt that it's going to continue to really be a big area next year. The other two things that, again, come up a lot are attention and curation. And again, you know, bolstered by the fact we're seeing activity in that space. We're seeing the likes of Audigent being bought by Experian. And, you know, there are companies that are looking very closely at attention and how they can try and really bolster their attention metrics and bolster their attention offering. And I think that they're two things that are changing the way we look at how we're measuring media and how we're buying media and selling media. And that needs to happen, especially as we move away from the third-party cookie. So I think for me, they're the kind of the big four things: AI, retail media, attention, and curation.
Yeah, excellent. Rachel, thoughts on those and your own?
I think Lindsay is definitely onto something. I was going to answer this question by saying if I was Ciaran, I would say it's going to be the year of curation, which Lindsay has already mentioned. And then I thought about why I think it's not specifically about curation, but that is a key element. For me, I think 2025 is going to be the year of anything that helps brands to deliver more relevant advertising, to access more relevant advertising, and deliver more relevant advertising outside of the open web. So, you know, curation platforms are a sort of a function of that. But I think that if we think about what our internet consumption habits are going to be like or are currently like and what they're going to perhaps evolve into in 2025, I think we're all going to be spending more time in either utility environments, so whether that's utility apps or, you know, or even, you know, desktop websites, whatever, marketplaces, and then also other sort of a sort of entertainment style environments that are either app driven or, you know, discrete specific marketplace or website driven, right? So I just mean that more, and you're seeing it already in how people are building their businesses out. So let's look at Uber, for example, classic utility app, building out a massive advertising business. They've got an enormous amount of data. This connects somewhat to one of the other things that Lindsay just mentioned that she feels is going to be a feature of 2025. We've talked at the back end of this year about how anyone that's got really good quality first-party data has the opportunity to build a retail media type of network environment for themselves within their own business. That's effectively what Uber's doing. doing, that's what you're going to start to see other businesses, whether they're brands or otherwise, that have got good first party data doing. So the likes of, you know, banking apps or, you know, credit card providers or any kind of payment solution providers. And so therefore, I just think 2025 is going to be the year of any tool or solution that can help brands execute in that environment, whether it's retail media network, whether it's another sort of walled garden. I don't mean the classic walled gardens. I mean the sort of new age walled gardens. I think that's what's going to be heavily featured in 2025. And of course, curation is, like I said, just a function of assisting brands and marketers and agencies manage all of that. So that's where I think 2025 is going to be focused.
Yeah, I think my answer to this is kind of a neat package of every answer you've given. I think it's going to be the year of quality. I think that pertains to quality media, quality audiences, quality data, and that, you know, that brings in attention, curation, publishers. I think, yeah, I've been talking about this for the last couple of months with people on calls regarding, you know, the focus on quality, the backlash and avoidance of MFAs anymore, the resistance to AI slop. I think we're going to be looking at, yeah, some a very creative and a very, yeah, quality driven year. I think that's that might be the watchword for the year.
I think it'll be the year of shitification. So yeah, screw you and your quality. It's all about shitification of the web.
I'm trying to bring a ray of sunshine to our industry, Lindsay. But yes, I can actually see the flip side of your point. Maybe it's maybe the AI slop just takes over and that's it. And all we get auto-generated tunes, auto-generated TV programs. Maybe it is the shitification.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point. I think John and Lindsay, you've come in there on the element of it that makes it particularly interesting, which is in the type of internet world that we live in at the moment, you are seeing a sort of an extension of either extreme. So you are seeing the shitification of content get worse. So the terrible content is getting more terrible, but you are also seeing people with very high expectations around excellent quality content. If we thought about our TV consumption habits 10 years ago, there's no way that we would have had access to the same volume of really high quality content that we're seeing today. And that's as a result of the proliferation of streamed content and businesses getting really heavily engaged in creating that original content. And people are thoroughly enjoying consuming it, right? And it's changed our expectation of some of the quality of the content that we're consuming. So I think you're going to see more people kind of flee to either end of that scale. There'll be people that just get completely swallowed up by shitty content because I guess it can be addictive and maybe you're a weirdo. And then there'll be people that are like, you know, that only want to spend their time consuming quality content. And there'll be a market. There'll be a market for both. So, yeah, I'd like to see, certainly when it comes to advertising as well, I'd like to see a flight to quality, right? Because you think we've got all of the tools and all of the ability to make it so much better than it ever was before. It would be great if that's the path that we're all aiming on going down.
Yeah, I agree. I was being facetious. I do genuinely have high hopes for next year. I think it's going to be a good year. This year's been a bit of a leveling out. There's been lots of highs but also lots of lows. But I think that they are all playing into, as John, you know, put it, kind of this fight for quality. And I hope that next year that actually comes to fruition. And I feel like it could do. And it's not going to be perfect. Yeah. Never is. But, you know, I think there's definitely great strides being taken.
Definitely. I'm just going to pick up on what you were talking there about viewing habits, Rachel. Might edit this out, don't know. Do you know what Spelunky... we'll see how it goes.
That is generally the comment that comes right before not editing anything out.
Not editing out at all.
Carry on.
Do you know what spelunking is?
No, now, I've heard of the word. I've heard of the word, but I have no clue what it means.
I think it's a US term, but it's cave diving. It's caving, yes, and going through caves. And I was listening to The Watch, which is one of my favorite podcasts about the TV landscape and the media landscape. And a great writer and podcaster, Chris Ryan, described his viewing habits as he doesn't watch anything. He just goes spelunking through the AVOD services, which Which is a wonderful descriptor for, like, when you've worked your way through half an hour's worth of little screens and premises of films you'll never watch, and that's your evening gone. I just think maybe it tickled so me quite time. A lot.
It reminds me of a meme that's a few years old now, and it's a child, not much child, a teenager maybe, like with their meal in front of their evening meal in front of them. They've got the remote control and they're like, I've got to find the right thing to watch before I can start my meal. And it takes them so long because there's so many options that their meal goes cold. And that is me most days. I'm like, oh, what should I watch? I just don't know. Where do I start? Do I want that? Oh, I don't know. Do I want that? And I will watch over 10 minutes and go, no, I'm not feeling that. Let me move on to this instead. And I'm spelunking my way through life anyway. But that definitely feels like an appropriate way of describing people's consumption habits.
It tickled me. And I just thought, yeah, that's actually dead on. That's, you know, that's exactly what I'm doing on an evening with, you know, from whether it's Netflix or Tubi or any of them. It's just, you know, bounce. No. Yeah. Oh, bedtime.
Exactly. I do that. I go, and you know, mine's bounce. I might just do a bit of Duolingo. Oh, yeah. Time. Yep. Okay, that's the end of that.
That's it. Yeah, quickly do my puzzles. A quick episode of Your Bogan Show, and then
Your Bogan Show.
Upper Middle Bogan, listeners, great show. It's not mine, although I would happily take credit for creating it because it's a great piece of entertainment. But have you been watching it, John?
I haven't yet, but I must over the Christmas break.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It'll entertain you.
Excellent. Well, we won't edit that out. That was quite a fun conversation in the end.
Definitely. And everyone needs to know what spelunking. It's spelunking?
Spelunking. I'll put that in the show notes as well. I'll round off this discussion and this excellent episode of the MadTech podcast with a look back on our 2024. We always have quite a lot of hilarious moments in the office or at our events or wherever. And I want to know what your favorite exchange wire moment of 2024 was, Lindsay.
So a personal highlight of mine was actually getting to interview a GB gold medal winning Olympian on stage at the Wires this year. So I got to interview the wonderful Beth Shriver, who is BMX world champion, female BMX world champion and winner of the gold at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. And I just loved her. She was just brilliant and so inspiring and just such a pleasure to interact with, a pleasure to deal with. And that was for me a personal highlight. But apart from that, I would say that ATS London was just incredible, and I got to moderate a panel in a Jeff Green and Andrew Casale sandwich, kind of being in between both of them was quite impressive. But getting to see them both on stage with Kieran was just really good conversations. Nice to have them both being so open about what's happening in their perspectives on the industry, their perspectives on what's happening in their own companies. And, you know, that's not something that happens very often. So it was a real pleasure to be able to be part of that and be able to bring that to the industry. So they're not particularly amusing highlights, but they certainly were highlights for me. And I went to Singapore, but I didn't get to travel over there, so I heard it was incredible, but I wouldn't know. So I really wish I was there because I really felt like I missed out.
Yeah, your jealousy boiled to the surface there.
There we are.
It did. The green eyed monster came out there. I'm sorry, guys.
It did. Rachel, what was your exchange wire highlight of 2024?
I mean, I think firstly, I need to comment a little on Lindsay's. I agree. Beth was amazing at the Wires this year. And, you know, we've dealt with a lot of, I'm going to put in inverted commas here, talent at award shows. And good Lord, was
good
Beth
Lord.
A million times easier to deal with than most of the talent that we've ever had. And in many ways, far more talented as well. So, yeah, that was fantastic. It was such a great interview. And she was a really inspirational person. And, you know, to take the stage and give us some anecdotes. And also because she got particular experience, you know, she won gold at Tokyo, as you said, and then completely bombed out of the Paris Olympics and was able to take the stage and sit in front of an audience of 330 people and talk about how she dealt with that. So I thought that was brilliant. And then I suppose it won't surprise you to know I had two moments. I've got two moments myself, and one of them, of course, is ATS London, because it's impossible to close out 2024 without reflecting on what a great show it was for us personally. It's the biggest we've ever done. it's the highest volume. I mean, we, you know, we're fortunate. We always get, mostly positive feedback. Of course, we get a few points of suggestions of how we could do things better. That always happens. But this year, it was just overwhelmingly positive, and I felt like everyone in the industry was there. And then, of course, we had the likes of Jeff Green and Andrew Casale on stage. And I was chatting, Kieran and I were chatting with an industry colleague over in, who's based in Madrid earlier on this week, Mikel Lecaroz, who runs Next 14 and Programmatic Spain. And I thought he summarized it well. He wasn't at the event, mind you, but he watched the video afterwards. And he said, Kieran, I loved your interview with Jeff Green. Not one single word was wasted. Every single word that came out of both of your mouths had some meaning to it. And I thought, that's a good standard for an interview. Because Lord knows, I know how to put together a compound, complicated question and talk a lot of nonsense. So I think it's good we've got, good we've got a couple of people in the business that know how to do it differently. And then the second moment for me was at ATS Singapore. And John, you're going to have to help me with this because I still don't really understand the reference. But it was, John knows what I'm going to say. It was Kieran taking the stage for an opening fireside chat with the wonderful Lee Terry, who's CEO of IPG APAC, and somehow likening him and Lee to, again, the quote was, two fat lads in space. Something to do with the children's television program. Can you remind me? It was just the most hysterical reference I've ever heard.
That was my highlight as well. I was going to go through that one because it was, still laugh. No, it's good. I will explain. So yeah, the reference was in terms of like the AI future and everything, in the Pixar film WALL-E, when the human race has destroyed the planet and now everyone who's left lives on a giant spaceship run by a supermarket chain, and their bones have, the evolution has been unkind, and they all just fly around on chairs with an incredibly increased body mass, literally fat lads in space. And so Kieran was talking about the AI future, and he was like, oh, Lee, you and me, we're just fat lads in space. And I was almost in tears in the audience watching Kieran say that. So yeah, that was also my highlight.
And then I got a thank you email from Lee afterwards. If you listen to this podcast, Lee, thanks for the thank you email. And I'm afraid I'm going to disclose to everyone what you said. He said, Rachel, thanks for the opportunity at ATS this year. It was a great show. I've never been referred to as two fat lads in space on stage before, which is completely believable. Why would you have been? So
that'll be first and last, won't it?
That's it. I hope it's a last for sure.
Why would anyone have been? But yeah, that was my highlight as well.
John, did Kieran also get in the plug for the weird ad net that he was on about when we were in Singapore? Was that
Jingle Jangle?
Jingle Jangle. You've got to remind me what Jingle Jangle is. Lindsay, you missed out on all of this.
I know. I have a clue what you're talking about.
Come back to Singapore soon.
Oh, this was wonderful. Yeah, Kieran had he'd got the idea in his head and had told Rachel and I in the morning that he had an idea for an app called Jingle Jangle, which was something to do with AI and making like audio jingles for brands. And the next thing that happened, he was on stage with Lee Terry again, and he got Jingle Jangle into the conversation. It's like, it was so top of mind. He's just like, Jingle Jangle, that's, you know, oh God, it was wonderful. So yeah, that was it.
It was his idea for an audio ad network, I think, Jingle Jangle.
That was it, brilliant. Jingle Jangle. It was in his head and came out on stage. And yeah, a great time was had by all. Lindsay, well, sorry that you missed out on that one.
Yeah, thanks.
Excellent. Well, that was the year that was and the year that will be. Thank you very much for both of you for joining me today to give your insights.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you all very much for listening throughout 2024. It's been an absolute pleasure to bring you the latest from media and commerce, and we'll be back in 2025, maybe with a new jingle, who knows? But yeah,
jingle jangle.
Enjoy your festive seasons, one and all. Thank you very much.